Hi, I'm Kendall Brower, and I went on the mission trip last week to Boulder, Colorado. Just to give you all the layout, we spent 5 days doing flood relief in Boulder, and then we traveled to Buena Vista, where we spent 3 days in Noah's Ark doing things like whitewater rafting, climbing and rappelling, and lastly, hiking a 12,000-foot mountain on the last day. So that was kind of our whole week in a nutshell. Something I learned on this mission trip in particular is how much God is really present in my life. I'm going to start off by reading Mark 4:35 through 41. On that day, when evening had come, he said to the disciples, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him in the boat just as he was. Other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already swamped. But Jesus was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" So basically, Jesus is tired after this long day of teaching and decides to leave the crowd and go on the boat and take a nap. While Jesus is asleep, there's this huge storm going on. The disciples are going crazy. They're panicking. You know, they're wondering why Jesus isn't helping them. And during this huge downpour, you can imagine the fear and panic that they're feeling. Like, we probably all go through this panic at points in our lives, and there's times in our lives when we feel this way and we can't help but wonder, "Where are you, God, and why haven't you shown up yet?" I remember on this mission trip, the second night that we were in Buena Vista, we had finished a day of whitewater rafting, so we were all pretty weary and tired and hungry and just wanted to have dinner and go to bed. So we got our plates, and we were eating in this pavilion-like tent thing. So half of it was covered with the tent, and half of it was uncovered. So there wasn't that much coverage, but anyways, this huge storm comes, and, you know, rain is coming from all different directions. It's crazy. People are rushing into the pavilion to try and escape it. I think at one point, Sue Fowler even makes a trip to see if our zips are zipped up, and we just think it's couldn't really get worse, but then it starts hailing, and it's crazy. We're all kind of wondering when this downpour will end. But then, as sudden as it had arrived, it was gone. And in that moment, it was kind of like that dead calm that the disciples had talked about after Jesus rebuked the wind and said, "Peace, be still." Within a few minutes after that storm, not one but two rainbows appeared in the sky. You might have seen them in the slideshow. It was the most beautiful and vivid thing that I have ever seen. And I think at that time I was realizing exactly what those disciples were realizing. They asked, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Who then is this that calms a powerful storm and creates the most beautiful rainbow I've ever seen?" I think a lot of us wonder when God will ever show up for us, and the answer to that is that he shows up everywhere and everything. Especially when we're looking for him. God showed up in this church's support, making it possible for the youth group to go to such an amazing place and have this incredible experience. God showed up when the Balance family offered to let the whole youth group, 17 people, stay in their home, use their showers, and give us breakfast every morning. God showed up in the sponsors, Sue, Jeff, Kevin, and Cheryl, who gave their time to spend with kids doing manual labor. He showed up in that rainbow. He showed up in how yummy every single meal was. He showed up when he was frustrated and couldn't climb that whole cliff. God showed up when we were afraid to rappel. He showed up when we were on that final stretch of the hike and we could see the top of the mountain, but we weren't entirely sure if we were going to make it. God showed up through this youth group, making a lasting effect on the community of Boulder, Colorado. And God showed up in these forever friendships. So when we are wondering where God is through the storms of life and the temptations and the unexpected hurricanes that blow against us, we need to remember that God is present everywhere and he is in control. When the storms of life threaten us, we have someone that will take the load. Amen.
When I found out the mission trip would be in Colorado, like a typical Texan, the first thing I thought of was the awe-striking sight of the Rocky Mountain peaks that I had never seen before with my own eyes. I became very excited that we'd be helping out with those affected by the floods in and around Boulder, Colorado, a national news story. I then became even more excited when Kevin said after our 5 long, honest days of mission work, we'd be spending 3 days as wilderness men and women in a beautiful location of Buena Vista, Colorado. It started at 8 a.m. Saturday, July 26th, and once we arrived, we did yard landscaping for Bob Balance's church. Next day, we removed our extreme gardening on Sunday. Monday, we removed flood debris, specifically rocks. Tuesday, we painted houses. Wednesday, we repaired closets. Thursday, we whitewater rafted. Friday, climbed and rappelled. And Saturday, hiked 12,000 feet, and then flew home on Sunday. As you can guess, we became more and more tired each day, but more importantly, we became more fulfilled each day. Our summer started off at youth camp, where we learned about liberation theology, coming out of our shadows and facing our fears head-on with the fullness of God's love. This topic spoke to us all, so Kevin decided to keep this as a theme for the summer, which I thank him for, because his mission trip was one of facing our known fears and our unknown fears. From seeing the Boulder homeowners face their fear that their homes may never be the same, to seeing Andrew Glazner face his fear of flying, to see myself facing my fear that I'm no good at carpentry, all in the span of 5 days, was beyond incredible. But I think the greatest display of being liberated by God's love was seen on our Saturday hike. I myself struggled with altitude and had a headache and body aches halfway when we stopped for lunch. After lunch, we broke into 2 groups, those who would summit and those who would go back down. As my mind said yes and my body said no, our guide Kaylee came over and said to me, she said, "You may only get this chance once." So with that thought in mind, I decided to push through. As we kept going with the doubled pace and no breaks, my mind was racing with all the reasons why I shouldn't have thought I could make it to the top, why I shouldn't have decided to go on up, why I shouldn't have. But then our lead guide, Brad, he said, "Take 10 minutes to space out and have a conversation with God one-on-one." So we did, and that time alone is what got me to the top of the mountain. In that quiet time, I was still questioning why I shouldn't keep going to the top, and then a feeling came over me like a warm blanket, and it was God telling me, saying, "You keep coming up with reasons of why not when there's just as many reasons why you can." God was telling me this in regards to hiking, yes, but also in regards to life. With the treacherous journey of faith, our doubts tell us many reasons why we can't make it or why we shouldn't even try, when in reality, what's the worst that could happen? It's okay not to know sometimes, and it's natural to fail. I grew up knowing doubts kill more dreams than failure ever will. Now, as the hike got steeper and the air got thinner, I started to think of why I could summit. My body is capable of more than my mind lets on. I want to do this for those who can't, for the disabled veterans, for the elderly that still have a heart of adventure but never got to experience this climb. I want to be able to tell my children and my grandchildren about this day, about how my fellow youth members motivated each other to the top and how we overcame our fatigue. And so we did. We got to the top, saw the most beautiful view we'd ever seen, and took many photographs. Though fear has been a deciding factor in the past, it was not on this trip, it was not on that hike, and it cannot be found anywhere in my youth members' hearts. Please pray with me now. Jesus, my brother, thank you for the good work you began in us long ago. Thank you for the love you poured out this summer and the past 7 years. I pray that you please continue to move in the hearts of this community and bless those who need you near. Paul said it best in 2 Timothy, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline." Amen.
We live in a world where we're forced to conform. We're constantly influenced by outside societal pressures to fit into this mold, one that's pre-made, one that we are simply expected to want to fit into. And this mold is a preconceived notion that we are limitless. If there is a will, there must certainly always be a way, especially in the technological world we live in. And thus, the only weakness that could stop us is our potential belief that we cannot perform something, that it is beyond our capacity, beyond our ability as humans. We want to believe that we can do anything, that we can take on anything, and that nothing would be able to stop us, especially if we're doing things with the purest thoughts and most noble intentions, as we often are, or like to believe. Thus, accepting that we have limitations is one of the hardest things to do. On our mission trip in Colorado, we spent a day in Buena Vista rock climbing and rappelling. This rock climbing involved scaling bare rock by oneself, relying on one's own strength and physical ability to reach the summit.
for me personally, this rock climbing experience resulted in being one of acceptance. I made it up halfway the rock, and then got stuck. I couldn't manage to swing myself around this protruding rock that would help me get the rest of the way up. No matter how much I tried, scraped my hands, went down, went back up, tried to like leap over it again, I couldn't get it. I became increasingly angry at this rock. I couldn't believe, and I couldn't accept that for all of my determination, for all of my will, for all of my wanting to get up that rock, my body wouldn't let me do it. I couldn't get up. My determination or will wasn't going to carry me through this one. So coming to terms with that fact and deciding to accept defeat that day for that particular event was one of the most difficult things I've done. When I got to the bottom, I couldn't believe how much of a metaphor it was for my faith, and I'm sure for many others as well who had trouble with that rock. Jeremiah 29:11 states that, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope." Sometimes, though it may seem weak, we must acknowledge that we have limits. They exist. We're not able to do everything on our own. It's necessary to allow others to help us and to put faith in God to help take care of the things that are beyond our physical capacity, whether or not we know what those things or plans for us are. Letting go, that idea was something we discussed at mission trip and throughout the rest of the summer. Letting go of wanting to be in control of all situations is so difficult. We can all relate to that. But just as I couldn't control that rock and make myself scale it, I realized that day that allowing God to be in control and allowing him a greater role in my life to help me accept those things would ultimately give me more freedom in my life and a greater faith. Amen.
The Bible story I thought best would fit with this talk is a very popular story, that of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. Matthew chapter 26, verse 39 through 42 say, "Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, 'My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will.' He went away a second time and prayed, 'My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done.'" This year at camp, Ryan Price, our camp pastor, told us a story from his childhood. He talked about how when times would get rough or tough at home, that he would run to the fort he had built in his backyard and hide. See, he felt safe when he was able to get away and isolate in his fort. We all have forts we run to, some physical and some in our own minds. Each of us fights our own battle. Plato once said, "Be kind to everyone, for we are all fighting a hard battle." And I'm a firm believer in that no one man's struggle is greater than another. All of us are struggling with something. Be it a physical ailment or a mental one, we're all going to struggle. There's something about each and every one of us that we aren't necessarily the fondest of. And this year's theme is liberation theology. And most people, when talking about personal issues, would say to you, "Go out and conquer it. Never surrender. Never give up." But I'm here to tell you to do something a little different. Instead of fighting and complaining about the cards that God has given you, choose to play the hand. Find liberation in acceptance. Now, this doesn't mean curse God and half-heartedly accept. I want us to honestly accept. When you study the etymology of the word to accept, it goes all the way back to its Latin roots, where it means not to just receive, but to receive willingly. In Jesus' case, he knows what lies ahead of him, a very painful death. And he has the power to fight back, but he chooses not to. He willingly accepts the card he's been given, and the freedom that comes is unimaginable. For us today, this looks like surrender. The concept of surrender to win is very dear to my heart. When we surrender, we don't just give up. Believe it or not, there is a difference between resignation and surrender. I had a hard time grasping this concept, and Finally, it hit me. I thought of it in terms of a battle. When I just resign, I just quit. I say, it's too hard, and I'm going home. But when I say, I'm surrendering, in battle, a general is going to do that because he wants his troops to be safe. He wants things to change, and that's exactly what we have to do. Instead of just giving up, let's surrender and expect a change. And when that change does come, because it will, be grateful for it because it will be glorious. For when we accept our ailments, they no longer hold the same power over us. We are free. So the next time life throws you a curve, instead of running into the backyard and hiding in your fort, go straight up to it and say, I surrender, for I know that my dad's got me. Accept what has come, and that great wall of fear will be torn down. The chains wrapped around you will disappear, and you will be truly free. And those around you watching will be inspired. There's a homeless man close to my house named Donnie. Donnie is about a 50-year-old man that stands outside every day in the sun, except for Thursdays, when he has to go to the hospital to have kidney dialysis. His disease has bankrupted him. He is alone on the streets, only comforted by his dog. But instead of feeling remorse or having a resentment against the world or God, he smiles every day and says to me when I pass, "It's a wonderful day, Mr. Dillard." And I say back to him, "It sure is." Donnie's acceptance inspires me, just like yours will inspire others. Go out and be that inspiration for someone who truly needs it. Free yourself and be a spark of liberation in someone else. Thank you.